All right, our next guest is, every time we get together, the name Sam Licklider is mentioned between the two of us. It's great to have with us one of the absolute best in this business, Tim Brando. Tim, welcome back, my friend. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Steve. Heck of a time of year, is it not? And I gather that the long summer, we'll see probably a few more days like this with multiple announcements of guys leaving and career coaches saying I'm out of here, albeit I want to take my victory tour, another lap like Coach K did. It's just that time of year. So it's good to be back with you.
It's great to be back with you. You know, I think you actually set the tone for the next question pretty well. I'm not surprised you did. But that is, I'm sensing that, because Mike hasn't talked yet, but Brad Stevens, made the move to the Celtics front office today, that the pandemic really kind of did a number on him, especially being in the bubble. I don't know about you, Tim, but everybody I talked to, and you talked to more people than I did, I felt that it really did a number on a lot of coaches this year trying to somehow manage their way through this. What did you sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the whole season for them was like a root canal. It wasn't, it was an endurance test for us, too. And I was one of the fortunate ones that didn't have to do games from his basement or his attic or, from some sterile studio miles and miles away from the game. Many of my colleagues did. But even for those of us that did travel, and I did not have as thick a schedule because of that. Networks made decisions to try to save some money. Everyone was hemorrhaging money this past year. So if you were going to be calling games on the road, you probably weren't going to do as many. And so that was the case with me. I probably did about half my normal schedule, but at least I was there. And in the conversations that we had with the coaches, always from distance now, I was never on the floor with one of them. I think I walked into the Rock at Seton Hall at the same time the Villanova team was coming in. And so we went through security about the same time, and I was able to see Jay Wright, face-to-face from 6 feet, but face-to-face. We were Zooming all the time, and it was a pain in the butt for everybody. I think that coaches that were dealing with their players and the anxiety that comes from waking up every morning, getting swabbed at 7:30, in some leagues they were doing it every day, some, and in other leagues they were doing it every third day. It was just a pain. And that was true in basketball. In football, you had position coaches that didn't, and position players that didn't see their teammates until game day. They were that distant from one another. So imagine trying to coach your team when your team is never really together until they come out, for a Saturday afternoon. So, yeah, it definitely played a role in I think, all of the decisions that we've seen made to this point, some more than others probably, because of maybe some past issues that they've had. Like, I figured this announcement was going to come from Mike very soon, right, after both decisions were made. Number one, by Kevin White as athletic director of Duke to step down when he did last year. And then when Roy Williams made his decision, I'm like, Mike cannot be far behind.
Well, what a career he's had, obviously. Look, we know about the 5 national titles and the 3 gold medals, and he was also an assistant on the Dream Team as well in 92. But look, this is something where you and I can talk about this, because I think you and I have been very fortunate that at our age, we've seen so much that we can lend some perspective to. If Mike Krzyzewski had gone through his first 3 years at Duke in the 20-teens and not when he did in the late 70s and early 80s, would he have survived?
No, not even close. And that story about athletic director Tom Butters and Mike is, it's just incredible. There was one, I think, other example of that, and it actually happened with one of Mike's closest friends, one of his closest friends, P.J. Carlissimo. He was in a situation at Seton Hall where they were about to make the move on him, And to the credit of a lot of people, the late Larry Keating being one of them, who passed away, and Larry, of course, went on to Kansas afterwards, I think he may have been in a similar situation. And, of course, he took them to the greatest height Seton Hall's ever had, getting to the finals. And were it not for the John Clockerty call on the block charge to center Emil Robinson to the free throw line, might have won a national title. But Mike, that story was just, I mean, Krzyzewski thought he was done. Butters is like, I've got to do it. I'm going to give you this contract extension. And Krzyzewski was in tears. He thought, you know, you don't have to do this. They were ready to run him out on a rail. Now, people forget, I mean, yes, you think Duke now, and you think Mike Krzyzewski, period. Krzyzewskiville, Coach K, Coach K Court, all that. You know, they had gone to the Final Four and to the national championship game and lost with a team that was outstanding. Mike Jaminski, my colleague, was on that team with Jimmy Spadarkle, and then lost their coach, lost her to South Carolina. You know, because Duke wasn't at that particular point willing to pay the freight. A job in the Metro Conference at that time at South Carolina was worth more than the Duke job was. So they had had great success. Duke was a proud program for a long period of time, 50s, 60s, and then again that late run at 1978, and they go into the tank. And he had to resurrect them, but they knew they were in trouble when Mike took over. His first year was the best of his first three, and the second two were awful. And he would not have lasted in today's environment. No question about it. Yeah. He would have been gone.
Yeah, it was that Jack Givens had the 41 for Kentucky when they beat.
41-point game. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now you have to have a class that then establishes not just winning, but your culture. Jay Billis, Mark Allery, Johnny Dawkins, they got Gene Banks out of Philly. What do you think they meant to then allowing Mike to not only just win, which was obviously critical, but then to then get that word culture in place that he wanted to have?
Well, you know, Kenny Dennard played on Mike's team, and Jaminski did not, but Dennard did, Banks did, Spinarkle and G-Man were both gone. But the willingness to bring them into the fold and to make them feel as though he needed them, even those that didn't play for him, all right, including Jaminski, was important to Mike because he knew he needed as many friends as he could have after the first three seasons. Yeah. And he always asked them back. It was that, you know, that culture. And Mike was adamant about the fact that he wanted staff members, by and large, to be guys that were former players, guys that played for him, stayed within the culture. You know, he only had Pete Gaudette and Mike Bray.
Right,
were the only two coaches that he had that were not former players for him.
Right.
Everybody else that he had on his staff played for him at some point, and most of them point guards, or two guards.
Right.
But
yeah.
The reality is that that was the key, I think, when times were really downtrodden. That he was able to reach out and not alienate some of the veteran players that he inherited. Listen, Dennard was still is one of his most staunch supporters.
Yep.
You know, he would buy 500 tickets for the Duke Carolina game at Duke every year. And it was a good sound business decision for him too. But let me say, and I mean this sincerely, Steve, I've been at this for four decades. I started in 1985 in the ACC, and that was also the same year I started at ESPN. But I had been calling college basketball since 1982, so I'm looking at the regional level before I got to the national level, and a lot of that time was spent in the SEC and ACC. And I mean, my timing could not have been any better. You had Valvano coming to NC State. You had Mike at Duke. You had Bobby Crimmins at Georgia Tech. In the SEC, you had proud programs beyond just Kentucky. You know, you had Dale Brown at LSU. You had Nolan Richardson coming in, Freddie Sutton at Arkansas. Yeah. I mean, it was just the golden age of college basketball in so many ways was during that period in which I came into as a young broadcaster at 29 years of age. And for those of us that have gotten to know and created a level of trust with these guys, it's the end of an era. I mean, it's a sad day for guys like me that have always dealt with coaches of different ages, but these were guys that were already there that were just a little bit older than me. Just, not a lot, but a little. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike is 75, I'm 65. This is a time when, especially with college basketball's popularity on the wane, and it has been really for 10 to 15 years. The regular season has been moved to the back pages. It seems that only the tournament is covered, even by those in network television that have so much programming of college basketball, don't talk about it at all during the regular season. It's only like, you know, the 2 weeks before, you know, who's in, who's not in. You know, the only thing you get is bracketology talk, and then the tournament starts. College basketball is in the depths of despair with attention, and the ratings have shown that. The coaches were the ones that were most coveted in terms of the sport's popularity. And as these coaches from this generation leave the game, I wonder now where we're going to go, what we're going to see. And I think a lot of them are leaving the game, not because of their health, but because the damned sport has done so much damage to itself, and it's so hard to manage a program now off the court with the decisions that they are impacted by that they have no control over in the NBA. And with that in mind, you know, Mike was on the receiving end of some good aspects of it. You know, had Jerry Colangelo not reached out to him, you know, after Chuck Daly was coach, and he not have been the Olympic coach, I think that extended Mike's career probably, you know, you can argue 5 to 10 years, certainly helped getting the recruits to win another national championship. But of that group, all the coaches that you've seen say goodbye, I think the mismanagement of college basketball in some strange ways that Billy Packer was talking about before he stepped aside. He saw the problem coming, and a lot of people wouldn't listen. You know, people blame college basketball for one and done. It's not college basketball.
No.
It's the NBA Players Association that forced that on people. And Mike tried his best to get the NCAA to listen. In the mid-90s, he went to meet with the NCAA, and they basically just laughed him out of the room. And his health was impacted by it. He had to take the year away. That was when he had the issues with his back back in 1995. He really wanted to help the game. And then ultimately he just threw his hands up and said, okay, if you can't beat them, join them. I'll start getting one and dones, and I'll coach him up that way. And because he was the USA coach, that helped him tremendously in getting that top-tier talent to sort of steal the thunder from John Calipari in many ways.
Yeah, exactly right, because of that association with USA basketball. And, of course, they won the gold in 8, 12, and 16.
Right.
And it's interesting how, for example, the pros gravitate toward Mike, but also the USA basketball connection helped him with one-and-done recruits. There's no question about that.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure. Now, listen, I haven't talked to Mike. We're good friends. I have not talked to him, and I probably won't for quite a while. But, you know, he was and is the genuine article, and we do have a great deal of trust and a strong relationship. The last year that I was involved in ACC basketball, I tweeted about this earlier today. Mike Javinsky and I got to call. For years, Raycom Sports always did the first game between Duke and North Carolina in syndication. Right. And ESPN took it around the rest of the country, but they were blacked out in that area. In recent years, it was the opposite. ESPN got the rights, didn't have to buy the rights from Raycom. But we continued doing those games and the tournament through the year 2019. In the final year, I knew this would be my last game. Mike Krzyzewski and Kevin White and John Jackson worked so closely with Mike. They knew this would probably be the last time I ever came into the building to call a game at Cameron. And it had been probably 15 to 20 straight years of doing it. And they got center court seats five rows up, mid court, for my entire family, my grandchildren, my children. Wow. And so he's a sweetheart, a good man, and has done a lot of good things for him. I'm not ashamed to say I happily accepted it because I knew that would be it for me. But I don't think, Steve, I honestly don't think that he's done. I think he may coach the Lakers. I think he might look at the NBA because his health is still very good. I mean, very good. Roy had some health issues in the last few years. Mike, I think, is this will be a victory tour for him. And as I said, I've not talked to him recently, but if someone were to, the Lakers already offered him more money than anyone's ever been offered.
Yep.
I could see the possibility of him doing, a couple of years in the NBA before it's all said and done. I really believe that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, I started doing Penn State in 82, so we started right around the same time.
And
when they transitioned to the Big Ten in 93, it's Bob Knight, Lou Henson, Gene Cady, Judd Heathcote, right? I mean, it's not, and you and I both know it's not that way anymore.
Tom Izzo's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer, and he's also my age. Tom is my age, and I don't know, how much longer he's going to go. He would be probably in that next wave of guys that are sort of carrying the banner for, the rock star coaches that have had NBA opportunities every year. Jay Wright is a few years younger than me, but that's the next group coming. We've seen, when I started doing college basketball on ESPN in 1985, Terry Holland had Dave Odom and Jim Larrañaga on his staff.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Now think about that.
I know.
Steph Greenberg was a GA on that staff.
Yep.
So that's going back a ways, and it just makes you think. I would be running around airports, running into Izzo out on recruiting trips, through the Chicago airport, running from, one flight to another. And he's gone on to become a Hall of Famer ever since. Those were the glory years, really, of college basketball. John Wooden was the most successful, no question about it. But in terms of the growth and popularity and the strength of college basketball, really the ground floor was its exposure on cable television. As cable television emerged, so did college basketball. And that's when the tournament really began to be a much bigger deal everywhere. So Wooden was enormously successful, but the competition for Mike to get through it and to get through tournaments with 48, then later 64 and 68 teams versus John Wooden, the Wizard, with 16 and then later 32. I mean, think about that. It was a little bit harder to accomplish really what Mike did in his era of college basketball, and he's certainly the closest thing to John Wooden that we had in this business with a pulse.
My gosh, I enjoy every conversation we have. Thank you so much for your time today, especially on such a busy day, Tim. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you, Steve. A pleasure being with you, going down memory lane there.
Thanks, Tim.
You bet.